This is Games from the Cellar, the board gaming podcast. This is Gloomhaven, Jaws of the Lion.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been exploring this one for a little while. I think we're
so to speak.
This is one. This is the fifth
module,
scenario module, whatever we're going to call it, that we're about to start.
Room, yeah.
And you know, it's a even the Jaws of the Lion, which is like a pared down version of the regular Gloomhaven game, is still in the BGG top 10.
Yeah,
I find that to be ridiculous, but I can see where a typical BGG user would really enjoy this game.
I got to admit, my initial impressions for this game were not favorable. It's probably just the hipster in me, but there was definitely a part of me that looked at Gloomhaven and thought, wow, this is wildly popular. It's probably not that good.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, really.
See, and it's funny because I think of you as much more in the mainstream of gaming than I am.
And I see this as the perfect, like, with, minus the dice, this is, like, designed for Sam.
Yeah,
Sam being
that.
The
Well, because Sam doesn't like dice.
Sam doesn't like dice. That's right.
I love circumventing dice, but the dice have to be there to circumvent.
Okay, that's fair enough. Right. And there's no dice in this.
Yeah.
There's
well,
like
you get
the
little
that,
card draws. Those
it's
are
not
dice.
The same.
It's like, it's like a three or four sided
no,
dice.
No, it's like a two sided die.
There's something about rolling a die that feels good.
Yeah, I agree. There's the tactile aspect to it as well. But dice add some variability so that you can play the same scenario over and over again and get very different results. And in this game with the cards, the change in results is pretty minor. Unless you draw your cancel card, there's just not a whole lot of variance in what you're doing.
Yeah, I see from the little character sheets that we have with all the perks, like eventually you get a stronger damage deck and you can kind of get rid of the zeros and the cancels and whatnot. And it seems like, you know, you're going to have a more favorable outcome as you play, but you know, we've only done the first four scenarios,
but even
the way that it's kind of geared right now, it's kind of, I don't know. It's very lackluster.
So I would also point out while you're modifying the deck, right? So to start with, you go from -2 to +2, right? And you have one cancel and one double, right? So as your deck gets stronger, you're reducing the variance. Mm-hmm. Which means
right, exactly.
That
that's what
you're
I was
going
say.
From a 0 to a +2 with, I don't think there's anything bigger than a +2. And that means that it's less random.
Yeah, but some of these, yeah, so the number becomes less variant. But the cards themselves, they have like, I'm the Void Warden who's the quote-unquote healer. My attack cards also have heals on them, so there's a little variance in what happens, but you know, the thing about like dungeon crawling games and like D&D sessions and, you know, the thing that I think this game is missing is those stand-up die rolls. Like you need a 5,
yeah.
Or you need a 12.
Are we getting a little into the post?
We are getting back into the post-mortem.
But we'll circle back around.
We'll fix that in post.
Okay.
I think we're trying to talk about how there are no dice.
There are no
dice. In this game. And that.
And there's no card draw either. You've got your whole hand.
Influences
and you go from
there. Your first impression when you pull the game up and you go, oh, how do I play? And it's you have all of your options available to you all of the time, which to me creates a strong pressure to play optimally because
right.
there is exactly. a best move.
Yep.
You have all of your cards available. If you can find the best move, you should take it.
Yeah, it's a little more puzzly than it is dungeon crawly.
Yeah.
Though by the same token, thus far, I have not yet felt like we were in real danger. Except for that one time where John got killed in the first round and we just restarted because he had been killed outright.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Right. But, you know,
first monster, first attack.
Right.
Yeah, that's like two, three guys like poisoned me or something and I was
just
crushed.
Yeah, you got hit for like 12 damage and you got 9 health.
Yeah.
Right. So, but...
It's bad positioning.
So thus far, yes, that there's a pressure to play optimally, but thus far, the synergy between the character classes is such that mostly I think we've been able to get through relatively easily. It's more of a war of attrition than...
Well, and these have been the learning scenarios.
Yes.
So
I think we're out of the learning scenarios now, actually. Or no, this is the last one.
So, and point of fact on that, this is also the learning version of the game, Gloomhaven. So this is only 25 scenarios that are supposed to make you want to play regular Gloomhaven when you're done.
That's the point of Jaws of the Lion.
I thought it was an expansion.
This is the junior version.
This is the junior made for target version.
Well, we got a long way to go before we finish this.
Yeah,
we're going to be
playing
for months.
That's a long wind-up time, you know? You know when you start up a game and you realize the tutorial is like 5 hours long? I hate that.
Well, we're pretty smart. We can punch that out in 4.5.
Just don't read all the text. That's the key there.
Right.
It's my go-to right there.
Just, let me just press the skip tutorial button.
Right. Just tap the space bar over and over
again. Figure it out.
I can read. I'll be okay. So that was my first impression wasn't favorable. What about you guys?
I agree with you. I think it feels like a puzzle that we're doing and sort of feels like project management is the most important skill set in it. And that's what I do at work. So I'd kind of prefer to not be doing that on my free time. I want to give it a shot.
Okay.
We've played a couple of evenings at this point.
Yeah, two, I think.
And
this is the third.
This will be our third. And we're getting into a little bit more. Hopefully there's just a little bit more surprise to come. And maybe that'll make things a little more interesting.
Yeah, I see... When I look at this, I'm of conflicting minds because I can see where a lot of development went into this. I can see where there are details and there are some interesting design space decisions that have been made, and like the way the maps are part of a book. So you flip open the book, you lay it out, and there's your map. That's pretty cool. And you got all of the details that you need right there, and there's a supplemental map book that makes the maps bigger, whatever. I mean, that's pretty... There aren't a lot of games that do that. Now, there are games that do it, but...
I was going to say,
it's novel.
I've seen lots of them do that, but they may be riffing off of Gloomhaven.
So, I mean, there are a lot of things that I see here that I look at, and all I can think to myself is, if they somehow managed to fit in dice, this would be... a much more perfect game.
I don't think there's any disputing that the production quality on this is...
Oh, yeah. It's got good production quality.
And I'm not talking about the production quality. I'm talking about, like, the development quality.
That's true.
Even the general design.
Clearly, they put a lot of thought into it. It just feels like they put a lot of thought into perfecting vanilla ice cream.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
And that's great.
It's
if
a
you
very
like ice cream.
So we were talking about 4X games earlier before we started talking on the mics, and we were talking about how, you know, Eclipse is like the definition of a Euro 4X game. It's like it's got all the Euro trappings. Yeah, there are a lot of dice, but it's very management-y. I don't know how to say that otherwise. And I feel like this is a dungeon crawl that has been overly Eurofied by getting rid of the dice, by having these stat blocks that aren't really... Even the stat blocks to me are kind of boring and kind of bland.
Mm. You can't die.
You can't die. If one person survives, then...
No surprises, no long shots.
You don't even really
take.
Make any choices when leveling up your character.
Yeah, it's pretty... The perks you can... kind of choose what you want to do, but it's, for the most part, it's kind of on rails.
Post-mortem-y again?
Yeah.
I think at this point we just get rolling.
Yeah, let's just play. And
we'll be back.
We'll come back and we'll talk about our first five scenarios. Alrighty, gentlemen, we completed scenario 5. We've made it through the tutorial of the tutorial game.
Woo!
We are level 2.
I feel accomplished.
We're level 2.
I get one whole extra hit point.
We got a bunch of gold to spend in town if we choose to do so.
I think a bunch is
Got two perks.
Got a little bit of gold.
Got some perks going on. I was able to remove a -2 card from my attack deck. Man, Betty Grindlethorn is looking good.
I can't help but feel like there's some sarcasm in your voice here.
I mean, all right, so it may just be me. I'm used to games. Well, all right, so I'm not really used to campaign games, so that is part of it. And I think the improvement from game to game or scenario to scenario or whatever has to be incremental to keep people interested in playing all the way through. I'm used to games like Tomb, where as soon as you clear out a dungeon, your power goes up significantly. And so the next tomb that you go into, you're going in hot and like rolling twice as many dice as you were rolling before. And so there's like, I feel like the ramp in this is a little slower than I was hoping or maybe thought it would be.
I was going to say, I mean,
we're only second level, remember.
We're only second level.
But we've been through 5 scenarios.
But like, my character is not really going to play differently at all.
No, in fact, the future. For my cards, it kind of doubles down. I'm the hatchet guy, and I feel that it's making me that much more hatchety. I mean, right. Everything is throw an axe,
and so. that's like specialization's fine, but for the amount of actual change that happened, like we may as well not have leveled up for me.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I have one attack that'll be more interesting.
Except for the fact that the card says level 2, I don't really feel like it's noticeably more powerful or interesting than the cards I already had.
Yeah, right? So what happens when you level up is you gain a hit point, maybe. I gained 1 hit point. I went from 6 to 7. All right. So you get 2 because you're the tanky.
From 10 to 12.
And I was able to take a perk, which was, for me, the one that I chose was to remove the -2 card from my attack deck.
So you get to reduce the variance involved in attacking.
Anyway, the reduction that offers me is, it almost feels negligible. I mean, granted, yeah, that -2 is going to come up at the worst time, but now that it's gone, I don't know. It just doesn't feel like, you know, in D&D, you go from a D8 to a D10. You're rolling bigger dice.
The level up is so small, it's almost incidental.
Yeah.
Right?
All right, I will say, I do know at level 5, we open those boxes.
Okay, so there's a big upgrade at level 5.
So there's some kind of upgrade that happens at level 5.
And to be fair, when you're playing traditional Dungeons & Dragons, when you go from level 1 to level 2, you get some more hit points, but that's kind of it.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't get a whole lot more than that. I mean, if you find a magic item, that's great, but I mean, that's... It takes a little while to get your feet under you.
I guess my question is in D&D, because I haven't played a lot, and usually when I do, we're playing a level 5 one-shot or level whatever. How many sessions does it typically take to go to second level?
A couple.
It varies wildly.
Yeah.
I mean,
the most recent campaign, we're level 2 by the end of the first.
You might do it in one. I usually think
so. I mean, in that case, that kind of incremental doesn't seem like... And then you also have a lot more agency in what's going on.
I feel like you're kind of... I mean, I don't think that's a fair comparison, right? Okay. So in a role-playing game, and you did just kind of mention it, is you have a lot more agency. You can do whatever you want, mm-hmm. right? And frankly, depending on how you play the game, depending on how much role-playing you're doing, you maybe don't care what's on your character sheet because you're too busy, like, you know, just
trying to jump on the back of a dragon.
Yeah, you're doing social stuff, up whatever.
Front. I mean, you're negotiating, you're bending right. the corner,
but
you know,
this
politically.
Isn't a role playing game, right?
No.
It's a board game.
It's an adventure game.
It's
I guess
not. This is in no way a role playing game.
Yeah, it's thematically the same, but it's mechanically it's very different.
But yeah, mechanically it's very different, and so it needs to lean into those mechanics that make it distinct.
The combat mechanics are pretty similar, right? Disadvantage, advantage, you know, that instead of dice, we've got these little cards.
Dice effects.
That they're, you know, one of the comments I made, you know, while we were playing is that I do think this is reminiscent of a Dungeons and Dragons campaign, or at least a one shot, right? In that, but you've got the preset characters, right? You came in, your DM's like, here's your character, here's the campaign, you know, here's the story, go.
I don't know. It's more than that. Especially these days, Dungeons and Dragons has become much more personality driven than mechanically driven. And, you know, I used to always rail against people that would, I used to call them stainless steel characters, as people that create killing machines and that's their specialty, and they really don't want to have any personality in their characters. They just want the machine that will go in and you find a place where you can kill things and get your experience points and get your gold. And that's typically the part of role-playing that I find least satisfactory, or provides least satisfaction. I'm much more interested in, you know, negotiating with the guy for how much it's going to cost to go clean out the place down by the docks or whatever it turns out to be. And in this game, and you can't do that in a game that's driven by cards. And you know, you get option A or B. Yeah. That's your choice.
You have A or B.
Without a referee managing the game, that is simply impossible to do. You just can't do that.
And you know, I think the unicorn that everyone chases is a DM-less D&D situation.
Exactly.
Because I remember when I was younger, like in high school and early college, we had all the D&D books. We rolled characters all the time. But when it came time for someone to be the DM, we would look at each other and be like, I don't want to do this. Yeah. I want to play this character I just rolled. Yeah. Or I don't feel comfortable taking on that responsibility. So for us, it was like, you know, all right, well, we'll just make characters and like put a pit of rats together and
go after them.
And go out. Yeah. You know, we could make like little baby one shots. Like,
yeah, you were consensus. Making Jaws of the Line. You were coming up with a scenario and then you were playing it. Yeah, that's
fair. So the point I was making is that because this isn't that type of role playing game, right? You don't have a referee. There's no one to adjudicate you negotiating or anything like that. It needs to lean into mechanics, right? So the mechanics need to be meaningful. And we just leveled up, and it really wasn't very exciting. It was kind of boring. I was like, oh, okay, cool. Hopefully now I'm one step closer to doing something interesting when I level up.
I mean, I don't know how the timing's going to work. And, you know, with the podcast, we typically don't get to revisit a lot. I'd like to see what happens at 5, because
I mean, I'd be fine with us just
level
peaking.
5?
Yeah.
At level 5, you get special cards, apparently.
Okay. I mean, I have no problem with coming back. I don't have a problem with revisiting any of the games we've done, but I think in particular a game like this, you do need to revisit at some point.
Right. The thing is, reaching level 5 is 210 experience points.
It could take us a little while.
It would take us a while to reach level 5. Yeah. Playing the game naturally.
And especially with the four of us, because we have other people in our group, and there are times that the four of us don't get together, and so it makes it a little more challenging.
So it's an investment, and frankly, I would be very disappointed if we opened that box and my options were two cards that are slightly different from the, at that point, 15 I already had in my deck?
mm-hmm.
Like, whoop-de-doo.
But and fundamentally, you're doing the same thing.
Yeah, fundamentally, they're the same thing, and I still only get to pick 10. So it's just making it harder to choose what I start the game with.
Yeah, that part confuses me, and it could be that it changes at some point. I don't know. But
given that
it's hard printed on the character card that you have a certain amount of cards that you can use. John almost as Hatchet almost always gets exhausted in our.
I think he starts with 9, right?
He has 9 cards.
Yeah.
I start with 9 or I start with 10?
What's the number in the top right of your character portrait?
10.
But also a lot of his cards are discarded.
Yeah, a lot of his cards are discarded, and then they also...
Yeah. He burns a lot of his cards by playing them.
They're ongoing cards, too.
So. Right, and so I have a couple of Godzilla attacks that do big things, so I can go in there and go after the big guy. I went after the stone golem or whatever it was the one time.
Yeah, so you can do cool stuff with that, but...
But then you're done.
And
then
that number's not going to change, right? So new cards could be neat, but ultimately every card you add is competing with every other card for a spot in your hand when you actually play the scenario.
So
unless it's a straight upgrade.
Right, and so all the maps, all the baddies, all the other pieces, fundamentally, you're an engine builder, and your engine is your guy or your gal. But
it's almost like I was saying with Heat. You know, Heat, I don't think is a great racing game. I do think it's an amazing hand management game.
Okay.
And this has serious hand management vibes to me.
Oh, it's all about hand management.
Mm-hmm. So it's all about managing, I mean,
it's 100%
managing your discard, man.
Managing your discard, the cards that you have to, that are one time use, that you have to burn out. Yep. And then when you rest and when you short rest, to me, like, I feel like that is one of the more interesting, it's an interesting mechanic, but it feels wrong.
Yes. I don't find it particularly engaging.
Right? I don't either. I found it annoying because, like, yes. Oh, I have to pick one of these cards to burn. It's entirely attrition gameplay, right?
Yes. Like, Perfectly put there.
If we lose, we're going to lose because we burned too many cards.
Just ran out of steam.
We just ran out of steam. And that's not interesting to me, right? Because it makes the game all about resource management when I'd really like it to be about risk management.
Yeah. Yes.
But,
right.
But there's no risks.
There's no risk.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no risk at all.
The number one threat is running out of steam.
Right.
That drives all of your decisions.
I raised that point earlier on where I said I never really felt like we were at risk of losing to the monsters we were fighting.
Yeah, in fact, right? we weren't at risk of losing a person in this particular case.
In this scenario, I don't think anyone went below half health.
No.
Yeah, I agree.
I did because I only have six.
Oh, that's okay. Right. I forgot. I took a four-hit spell right in your pocket the whole time.
We steamrolled right through this. You know, I just, to exactly your point, I'm not going to lose because the missions are dangerous or the monsters are dangerous. I'm going to lose because
we run out of time. It's an internal clock that we have to be.
The most dangerous part of that, I don't think that matches well with the dynamic you're going for. The most dangerous part of that last mission was the fact that the map was so big that I only had so many movement cards.
Yeah, and I was having to burn the bottom half of cards for the default movement because I could not get left behind.
Yeah,
and with the amount of movement that my character naturally has, the Void Warden, I could easily get left behind if I'm not burning the cards.
Right. We have the map up for the next scenario. Like, how many hexes across is this thing?
I mean, it's not even across. It's across and then up and then down, back down and then out. So,
like, it's
like 18 across. Yeah, if you go the straight line.
Yeah, it's almost 4 pages wide.
Well,
yeah.
and so we're walking into this and we kind of cheat. We know we have to hit the yellow hexes and we have to destroy them. So it's like, okay, we're going to go and we're going to spread out. Two people are going to take this one. Two people are going to take the next one. Once they start going down, you're going to move. The group in the back is going to move to the front. You're going to keep. So, I mean, that's what I've kind of. The game sort of has a right way to play it.
I mean, it's a puzzle.
Yeah,
right?
It's a puzzle.
It's a puzzle, and ultimately lots of puzzles have a best solution.
Yeah. And I can see you doing all these scenarios and then saying, okay, I'm done with this. I'm going to trade this one away. I'm going to get another game. This isn't a game that you're going to play a dozen times, short of playing different scenarios. But, I mean, once you complete the scenarios, it's going to be like, okay, it's like a jigsaw puzzle. Okay, I've done that jigsaw puzzle. It's time to move it on and get a different one.
Because it's not even like you could drastically change how the characters work either.
No, there's
they're going to be the same every time.
Yeah, they're on a rail.
And they have their own optimal. They don't even necessarily have an optimal. They have one way to play them.
Yeah.
So right? It's unidirectional.
Right. It's
so you're going to do with the cards. I will mention, I don't know if you guys have looked into regular Gloomhaven at all.
Mm-mm.
But there comes a point where the characters get retired and you have to take a new character.
Okay.
I don't know how it works. My assumption is, and it could be completely wrong, that you get each character for two or three or four scenarios. They retire and then you get a new one. So there's a constant
There's
a churn of how you're playing the game.
So why don't they let characters die at that point?
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
I mean, there would have to be, right? I mean, like, this is neat, but I'm already kind of getting tired of playing the same guy every time, right?
Like, we'll pass our characters to the person on our left.
Because it really is like every time.
That's not a terrible idea. I won't hate that.
Yeah, because you're playing with roughly the same hand every time because your cards all do roughly the same things in slightly different ways. Yeah. And, you know, 10 scenarios in, I've played this game already.
Yeah. I know reliably every time we pick it up, I know what I'm going to do on my first turn. Right. If there's a dude within movement, I know exactly which cards
I need to get out and start.
And
start
it's not even a question of if those cards are available.
Because they are.
They always are.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think with the regular game, so with this one, they had to pare it down. Well, they didn't have to pare it down, but they made the choice to pare it down so they could get that price point into the mass market. And part of what they did was they basically give you four characters instead of the like 60 that the original game comes with.
Does the original game come with 60?
I don't know what the number is, but I know it's ridiculous.
Okay.
It's at least between 20 and 60 is going to be my guess. Somebody will correct us.
That makes me feel a little bit better.
Right. I'd almost have been more interested in playing the full version of Gloomhaven.
Well, you're welcome to pony up.
No,
for it,
I'm all right.
Go right ahead.
You got a birthday coming up, Ed.
It's already passed.
Yeah, this is passed.
I got a birthday coming up.
This is at least 15 scenarios. I'm pretty sure the main storyline is 15 scenarios.
Plus all this. I mean, this is scenario 25.
We've got two side quests that we've unlocked going into it. So
isn't this scenario 25?
It's number 25, yeah.
This is one of our side quests.
Does that imply that there are at least 25 scenarios?
There's 15 in the main line, and then there's 10 side quests that you can do.
Oh, so this just happens to be the highest numbered
quest. This happens to be the highest numbered one that we pulled on our first.
So in theory, you could do 25, and then you've run the set.
That's a lot of scenarios, right? I mean, and compare this to like Adventure Tactics, which we've also played recently.
Mm-hmm.
And they're similar in that they are,
campaign
RPG facsimiles where you go play through the scenarios, your characters level up.
And choose your own adventure sort of
tasking. They're very similar in that sense.
Yeah.
Mechanically, they're fairly different. You're still moving guys around on a grid, but...
Right, you're still moving around a room. Adventure Tactics, though, you're drawing a hand of 5, 6, or 7 cards.
Yeah.
So you don't always have the options you want. You have to work with the options you get.
And you roll lots of dice and bring more cards. It's a much looser
thing
here.
That's a great term.
We've described this as being on rails. I think that's to its detriment, is it's too controlled. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I want to point out, when we say on rails, we don't mean that every single move is prescribed. There's still a lot that can be done. Just the whole scenario itself is on rails.
No, I mean mechanically.
Mechanically, it's on rails, there's on rails, which is, there are games where like it plays you.
Okay, so yes, I don't think you could sit yet. It would be very difficult to sit down and plot out the most optimal course of action for every scenario. You probably could, because when you have all of your options available and you can pick and choose, that lends itself to being deterministic.
I think two more scenarios might answer that question.
They discourage cooperation between players.
Right,
because if players did cooperate, it would become very quickly obvious what the best order in which everyone should go.
Yeah, and then you get the alpha gamers.
Sure, right.
Even without an alpha gamer, if you've got four people that are all peers and willing to negotiate it through, you're still going to run into the same thing where you're going left, I'm going right, you're going up the middle, and
right.
I don't think preventing that by adding a line in the rulebook that says, and you're not allowed to talk to each other when you do this
about initiative
is very good.
Really, it's the initiative that's the thing they tell you not to talk
about. Well, it's the initiative
about.
You're not allowed to talk about specifically what cards you're going to play. You're not allowed to talk about your secret objective. That to me seems
a little lame.
Right, if that's your mechanism to try to control people from coming up with the best way to approach a problem, it's kind of weak.
And that's what I mean when I say that this game is like a very well-cultivated garden, right? Mm-hmm. The paths are nice and straight. Everything's very orderly. It's very like trimmed back and pristine. You're not going to be able to do anything with this game that would surprise the designers. Or make them go, I hadn't thought about that, right? Because they've thought about it already. They've pruned away all of the options.
They've developed the hell out of it.
They pruned away everything that was a little outside the boundary of what they wanted or that maybe broke a scenario somewhere. You can't do it.
So it's not on rails. It's highly structured. Is that a better spin for it?
So sure. I like the garden aspect. The garden analogy, because there are branching paths, but they all get you to the same place.
Yes, and
so you have choices, but
to compare it to go back to the real role playing games, right? In a real role playing game, you're not in a garden; you're in a forest, right? You can go wherever, do whatever, and at least for like the older school ones, right? They're not super well developed. There are crazy abilities that let you do random things that nobody thought about.
Kill the DM.
Sure.
And didn't go that far, but
I did.
True story.
There's a lot of joy in finding those edge cases and going, oh, I can do this neat thing. Look, right? You get to feel clever when you find stuff like mm-hmm. that. You're not, I don't think you're going to get that here.
No, one of the things that really I'm struck by is essentially the lack of any kind of tactics.
Yeah.
Right? Like you're not really rewarded for positioning. Like there's no...
There's really no favored ground in right, any of these, exactly. these adventures
you just,
so far.
You just run up, you punch him in the face.
Yeah.
Right, or you get
set
like,
your optimal distance.
Right, so set your optimal distance.
I'll disagree a little bit, just based on the fact that there is optimal positioning for my character, the Void Warden. She needs people to be in certain places for her abilities to trigger, and that's it.
But like, that's less tactics you know. Than just being forced.
And
to manage,
yeah, and there's
where you
there's
are.
Nothing yeah. about the way this game is set up that it couldn't be. One guy holds the door while two people go in and bust the safe while another person is working on their escape route. And I mean, you could have that sort of thing happen in a game like this. But so far, this is kill these monsters and the scenario ends. And that's it's simple and it's straightforward and it's hard to screw it up too badly, but
there is one called the heist in here somewhere.
So okay. I think ultimately what we're getting at though is that it's not doesn't require you to think very hard.
It's a killing right? spree, right?
You just because yeah well ultimately it has to be, right? Because it comes back to it's a game of attrition.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right?
You have to do things as quickly as you can because otherwise you will just run out of turns.
Or fall asleep.
Or, yes, your character will become exhausted. You'll run out of turns.
Well, run out of turns or run out of hit points, at which point you just
yeah.
lie
but
there,
it's
I guess.
Real easy to heal up. I think we all have some sort of healing.
That hasn't been a challenge yet.
And, you know, the monsters don't have enough hit points that we've struggled to kill them, right? And no. we've all roughly... I think this last scenario, we set it up so that we all roughly made an attack each round, and we killed the monsters, in some cases, before they got any turns at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So unless...
And that's been the case in a lot of these.
Yeah, I mean, unless you consider making sure you attack each round to be a tactical challenge, when, frankly, I think it'd be harder not to, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I had one round that I essentially wasted.
Like
game,
acting in good else. Faith where you're not just going and standing in the corner.
Oh my God, the game is about keeping tempo.
Yeah, it is. Because even the cards themselves, you have to play a top and a bottom part. And most of the time, there's an attack on the top and some random effect on the bottom. So even then, you'd struggle to not make an attack every round.
And a move, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, generally, you only won't make an attack unless
you can't reach
unless
anything.
You have, yeah, you unless you reach. Have low initiative, right? And everybody else killed him before you could get there.
Yeah, I mean, we almost got...
That was happening to me a lot yeah. in the first couple of scenarios.
Well, and in this scenario, it almost happened simply yeah. because we had not gone through the next door yet. And we just ran out of dudes.
We just ran out of things to kill.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we could make it harder by bumping the scenario level up, but all that would do is just give the bad guys more health and make them deal more damage.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, the least interesting way of making the game more difficult.
Right.
It seems to me this could be more creative. I think they could have found ways. I think... You know, the memories you have from your role-playing battles from when you were a kid is when something desperate was going on. You were holding back 100 men or you know, yeah. there's something crazy going on, or you needed to sneak in, do something, and sneak back out. And none of that is here. Fundamentally, all the cards are about creating your killing machine and having that do the job.
Well, I think just by the design of the game, you're not going to have those moments because for you to be in that desperate position and for you to feel, oh, I'm trying to succeed. I don't know if I will. Right. Mm-hmm. You need to have an element of chance. You need to be able to take risks.
Yeah, that's
and
a point.
Here, if you're in a desperate position, it's because you played bad and you've burned through all of your resources for no reason. And so you're not going to feel desperate and hopeful. You're going to feel dumb.
Yeah.
Well, and you're going to feel done. It's going to be, as things become desperate, you can't trade risk for reward, mm-hmm. and it's just, well, they're going to wear us down, so do we continue the scenario or do we start from scratch?
Right, you're going to look and be like, oh, it
took dig yourself out of a problem.
It took us two rounds to kill everybody in this room. That means we're just not going to be able to play enough cards to get to the objective.
Right.
Yeah, that's just not satisfying.
I think they could do more with the concept. I'd be curious to know if the original does more with the concept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Obviously, it has to, because this is pared down. But there could be the potential, but I'm not seeing it. I know what's in the boxes. I peeked. I'm sorry. Whatever. And I don't see... It's interesting. I think it'd be cool when we get there, but I just don't see it being the game changer that we think this game needs to, like, fully embrace it.
I mean, I'm disappointed, to be honest, because it
especially when it's, like, ranked number six
or
number
eight
or something.
Right, like, I'd like it to be cooler, but, I mean, it's over-designed, right? I mean...
Over-refined, I mean, man.
Yeah, and it's got so many pluses. Like, the box art is great. I even like the setup of the levels. I think the setup of the levels is often great with the whole, you know, especially as the demolitionist, you know, the obstructions that are in the way, right? I think they make, like, great little, it would give my character, like, a real use.
They do kind of seem like they're only there for the demolitionist to blow up, though,
right,
don't they?
Exactly. They don't bring anything really tactical.
Like, they're not really,
don't seem to be playing to anybody's strengths. I mean, if you
right, had so a guy, like if a
you,
gimmick.
If you had a guy that was fast and you had to, like, search six locations, find the one that has the key or whatever it is, and then you got to get back out, and, you know, so there are scenarios you could make that could be more interesting. You can make in a scenario where the bomber needs to go in and just blow
but
shit
you,
up.
But you can't guarantee having any one character.
Right.
Well, then at that point, you say, if you don't have this character, then you probably don't want to do this scenario.
But, yeah, I agree. For all that our characters have different gimmicks, they're not that different.
No, and then
because the challenge isn't that different. It's go kill things.
I mean, even to the point where, like, I don't think there's a melee character, right?
I'm mostly melee. I've got a couple ranged attacks.
See, I'm range all day.
Yeah.
So okay. So, like, I have a mix, right? I would have expected my guy to be melee and be like a melee bruiser, but I have a ton of ranged attacks and a solid core of melee ones.
Hmm. Yeah, I feel like there's so much they could do with the bones of what they've got, but it's just like I wouldn't know what to tell them.
And it's just these four characters, right? There's
no
additional
just
characters.
These four characters. It's like when you play a game, right? And you play a game which only has three stats for guys, right? It's really easy to tell who's good at what. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you play a game which has like 100 different stats, and you have no idea who's good at what because none of the numbers really mean anything individually. It doesn't map perfectly to this, but that's the feeling I get to it. We're like, it's washed out. That's what it is. It's washed out.
All right.
Nothing really stands out. It's just, okay, this game is fine.
He went and said it. Okay, so we're going to push on, though, right? We're going to play more scenarios.
I think, in fairness to the game, I think we got to.
I mean,
give it a few more rounds.
It's a free country. You don't have to do anything. I mean,
fairness to the game.
What do you mean fairness to the game?
You're right. It's an inanimate object.
This is
the
third night we've played the game. We've played this game for like 10 hours.
Hey, Kate, but looking at the stat thing, we're supposed to be playing this for the next 3 years.
Okay. but like 10 hours is a long time.
it is a long time. And what?
Like how long before the game gets a fair shake?
Oh. Right. And you know, you hear people on the internet saying, well, you know, you get like 120 hours of playtime out of it, so that's only like 72 cents per person per play hour. That's one hell of a deal.
This isn't Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah, and that sort of attitude doesn't... I don't think it serves anybody well. It's like, well, you know, you can go to a torture dungeon too, and they'll charge you significantly less. That doesn't mean you want to do it every weekend.
Because, we could play this every week for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
Right?
And not even be close to done.
Well, we'd probably be pretty done.
There's only 25 scenarios, right?
Okay,
we do a scenario tour a night. So say we're 12 or 15 total sittings in order to do
it. Sure.
So it's 3 months. If we meet every week, once a week.
We do two scenarios a night.
Yeah, okay. It's a lot.
I don't want to do that.
No, I don't want to do that.
Well, we certainly don't want to do it consecutively. I mean, we'll get other games into the picture. But I'll be honest with you, because Sam, you and Chris and I were getting opportunities to play Adventure Tactics simply because that's who was showing up on game night. By dumb luck. I mean, it's not like we were chasing anybody off. But on those nights that, you know, we're kind of texting each other and going, hey, I think it's just the three of us. It's like, oh, cool, we get to go back to Adventure Tactics. Because there's something about that game that just had more life to it. It seemed to have a little more...
Yeah, it's like less is more.
Yeah, well, I think, especially with the dice, especially with Adventure Tactics' dice, those black dice that have like...
They're so wild.
They have sixes and sevens and then ones and twos.
They have so you get these two ones, two sixes, and then a three and a four, something like that?
Yeah, I think there was a seven on there. But you have these vast swings of fate. So you can't roll a zero on them, but you could sure roll something that you didn't expect.
It was annoying.
It was annoying, but it meant that you had to be sitting on the edge of your seat because you didn't know what your result was. And with my guy, get my special axe out, and I got my special axe card, and I've got my card that does 6 damage already, and I'm like, okay, so I'm doing 9, 10, or 11 with this thing. And I know I'm killing the guy. So it's just, short of pulling that one card in my damage deck that just cancels the entire attack, there's no excitement to that. It's okay, I've checked that box. What's the next item on the task list to complete? And with Adventure Tactics, you don't get that feeling. There's enough variability. Like, well,
you never feel like...
Off.
So in Adventure Tactics, I never felt like I was only going to do chip damage. Or rarely, right?
Right.
There was always the chance I could roll big.
Yeah.
The other thing Adventure Tactics did that I think was better was everything was a set piece battle. Like, every fight was against a boss monster, and it was focused on that boss monster.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, a couple of the early ones were kind of little scraggly things, but they have to get you started.
Yeah, they have to get you started. And, yeah, there weren't as many encounters, but each encounter at least had a good flavor to it.
Yeah, and especially in the middle levels, there were times where we're looking at it and go, yeah, we may be repeating this scenario because we're not doing so well.
And whereas this, it's like, okay, we fought chaos demons, I guess. I don't know that I could tell you how they behaved differently from anything else.
Yeah, that's a point.
They muddled us.
Yeah. Okay. The chaos demons muddle you.
Yeah.
But
we killed them so quickly it didn't even matter.
They didn't really muddle us.
Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't really feel distinct. They're just piles of hit points.
And mm-hmm.
At least in Adventure Tactics, like, oh, this guy's a centaur with a giant suit of armor and a lance, he's going to run up and down the map and impale you. This guy's a dragon. He's going to bounce around the map and breathe fire everywhere.
You hit on something that I've been bothered by, and that is the cards that tell the monsters what to do. I just don't think that mechanic works very well.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think that because like if they don't move, right, and you're out of range, they can't do anything. Right, and so then you just stay outside their range, and like the idea that the card is going to dictate the actions what the monster does.
Well, they don't. They really don't dictate that much. I mean, they change their movement a little bit. They change their attack a little bit. They don't. In Adventure Tactics, there are like special attacks they get to do.
Right,
so you turn over a card and they can be doing something very different.
Right, every
so
bad what I'm guy has here a like whole just, list of special attacks, yeah. Whereas these guys are like, oh, they're going to attack.
They're going to do the same thing, just maybe a little better,
or they might not move this turn, so you're safe because you're all outside their range.
Yeah, they don't feel distinct, and they still don't... So, I mean, you're never really going to get an intelligent enemy out of a card deck. Right?
I think,
excuse me. But you can make them distinct.
Mm-hmm. The thing that I think would maybe help, and I'm not trying to redesign this game because it's great for what it is, but it's not.
It's the number 8 game.
It is.
It must be magnificent the way it is.
Like it's great for what it is, but it's not what we want. And I think one of the things, especially with like the monsters and how they're directed by the deck, if a card is put up where nothing happens, like the monster can't move, there's no one in range, it's basically nothing, you should flip the next one over until it can do something.
So it's either moving or attacking.
So it's always, because, I mean, that gives it a little more intelligence in its design. That way it's
not just standing there giving you a stupid look.
So, I mean, that would be a small fix, but
it'd be a tiny thing, but even then, I'd rather have...
We're already overcomplicating a game that's kind of a little overcomplicated.
I mean, I know we talked about them, like, over-designing the game, but I would have preferred to, like, cut the monster decks in half and make them actually do different things.
Well, and each of these monsters has its own deck, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
They also show up in any number of different scenarios.
You could have the Zealots say, all three Zealots go after the same guy. Mm-hmm. Which would really suck for that guy. But, I mean, it would at least provide... There would be an oh shit moment where you turn that card over and go, oh crap, it's going to be me. I'm the one that's closest. And that's the kind of thing that this game is not presenting.
Right.
It's not presenting that surprise that either is wonderful for you and you get this wonderful action, or is an oh my god moment where you realize you might actually not survive the battle.
Because there's, what, 10 cards for each bad guy? 20?
Something like that.
I think it's 10. I think it was 10? 20 for the attack deck.
Okay. But there's, like, every time we flip over that card and I see, oh, it's just like they're going to move and they're going to punch somebody. Who cares?
Right? Yeah, their damage is 3. I can survive that.
Okay, so they're gonna punch somebody. That's the least interesting thing they can possibly do. Right?
Yeah.
I want to see, like, the goblins gang up on somebody and drag them down. I want to see the demons do something interesting, like, I don't know, teleport or throw a fireball or
send somebody into another dimension for a turn.
Something. No, the demon's going to walk 2 spaces and hit you for 3 damage.
And muddle you.
Or spots turn on the map where you flip a chit and it's a bear trap or it's a discarded weapon or it's, you know, something else.
The idea that the traps can be seen,
I know.
Kind of weird to me.
Yeah.
But, I mean, how else are you going to do them?
Well, you can have some dummy traps. You can have 10 traps on the board,
should,
3 of which
right?
are hot.
You should have dummy traps so that it's not the same thing.
And then you know all traps are going to do 3 damage.
Yeah. Well, the damage goes up as the scenario level goes up.
Yeah.
Well, but you could change that too. You can, again, you flip a chit and it's a 0 trap or it's a +3 trap.
The scenario tells you what the traps are going to do.
Yeah, you know how much damage they're going to do. It's just, it's
the no surprises surprise game.
Yeah,
it's a game that about adventure with absolutely no surprises.
Right, because it's not about risk management; it's about resource management.
Yeah. You know what else would be interesting? And I'm just so they tell you some of these maps span over the 2 pages and then onto the supplement book, right? Mm-hmm. But you set the supplement book up in the beginning, right? It would make more sense, or it'd be
when
more thematic
you open that door,
if you leave the supplement book closed until the door, until you open that door.
And that door and discover there's 20 more guys to kill. And again, it's an oh shit moment in the game. It's a surprise moment in the game.
And that's true. There's no exploration here at all, right? You have perfect knowledge of the map.
Mm-hmm.
But like, so the map you've got sitting up, which is map number 5,
the one
you
we
can
just
see,
did.
You can see that the
there
supplemental book, supplemental book, there's a door there at the end of the main book. And you could say, don't put that supplemental book up until
you hit
that
door.
But you need to know what's there because the game's about resource management. How do you know how much resources you have to... How do you know what tempo you need to match if you don't know what's there?
Well, you need to take your best guess, keep a little something in reserve, do a little risk management.
It's risk management, and I agree. And I like the idea. I'm just pointing out, the game wasn't designed that way because they didn't want it to be about risk management.
Mm.
They wanted it to be about managing
the
tempo. Yeah. You got to solve the puzzle.
Yep.
All right. So I think we've managed to cover everything about Gloomhaven, Jaws of the Lion. I think it's time that we do the rating thing. Let's see. So it's a cooperative game. We all won. Who wants to go first? Since it's a tie. You know what? I'll go first. Why not?
I think you won the most.
So, obviously, this is a very highly regarded game, and I can see where, you know, there are a lot of tight systems and, you know, very well thought out and methodical mechanisms, and it just, all of that just takes the surprise and the joy out of the game, at least at our table. There are going to be people that love this for the reasons that we've basically said aren't for us. And, you know, that's great. Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I can appreciate the fact that, you know, there are a lot of people that like this game. And I can appreciate the fact that I've enjoyed playing through the scenarios that I have, but I'm not at a point, and I don't think I'll be at a point where this becomes the game that I'm trying to get to the table every week. Like I said, I kind of looked ahead, looking for a different rule explanation, and I saw that something really cool happens at 5. I don't know the specifics of it. I just know something happens at 5. There are exciting moments when at least for me, when everything lines up with my character, when everything lines up right, I can play my powerful cards and get them to go off. You guys can pretty much set yourself up to do cool things. I will
say, your character is, I think, the one with the most conditions that need to line up to do cool things.
So when Ed like parks in the right spot and has the right amount of monsters next to him, and
he's the bomber,
go ham, like that's cool. And I get excited when Samuel like gets in a position where I can give him a huge attack, and then in the my next move scoot him out of the way so then Ed can come in and finish everything off. Like, the fact that my character has that kind of control over the board state, that is kind of fun and interesting. But like I said, the first three scenarios, half of my turns were dead turns because stuff wasn't lining up.
Or everything was dead.
Or everything was dead. I mean, a lot of it was you just weren't in the right place, or there weren't viable targets around. So I don't know. 7. That's what it's going to be.
All right. Sam, you want to go next?
Sure. We'll go around the table. I mean, I'm just not excited by this game, right? I didn't have a bad time playing it. It was fine. I'd play it again. There are other games I'd probably prefer to see on the table instead of this one. But I wouldn't turn my nose up at it, right? It's washed out, right? And I know I'm just a random guy, and I'm in no place to tell all the people who put this, what do you say, rank 8 on Board Game Geek? Something like that. I mean, I think that's just indicative that a lot of people have poor taste.
Man, hard hitting.
Wow, I was going to say. There goes our audience. All 13 people are no longer listening.
Yeah, I know. I don't feel like this does anything interesting. All right? Like, it's fine. I can see why people would like it, but I've played better. And I don't particularly feel drawn to, you know, going back down to a well-executed, mediocre design.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that I'm sitting here thinking, I would rather be playing Tomb right now, which is a busted game, but it's exciting.
Yeah,
it's exciting. I'll give you exciting.
It's definitely not well developed.
Yeah, you open doors and say, oh shit, plenty in Tomb.
Yeah, and then also it's, why is this card here? I'm pitching it under the insert.
Yeah.
So,
there's nothing exciting about this. It's just, it's a boring design, and they did an excellent job executing it.
It's exciting when it tells you to be excited.
Yeah.
Attritional warfare is the perfect analogy.
Yeah. And because it is well executed, somebody envisioned this and they put it together and they did a good job doing it. I just wish they'd put that effort into doing something worthwhile. I have to give it a 7.
Okay. So you know, given the thematics and the setting of this game, this is like standard Western European Dungeons and Dragons sort of setting.
No, or you look at the names of these different species. My guy is a Valrath.
Okay. Is that like from some part
of
the world?
He's not an elf. How could you say it's standard Dungeons and Dragons?
Okay. Well, I don't know. If you've seen standard Dungeons and Dragons, there's a whole bunch of new classes in 5th edition.
I think he's being a little sarcastic.
Yeah. So, you know, Dungeons and Dragons came out when I was 15, and I've been playing it since, and I'm 59 years old, and I've had some great DMs, some guys that really could make the game sing. So to some extent, I'm kind of comparing this to a crafted, you know, human being led response where, you know, in a situation like some of the rooms we've been in, they would have come up with creative ways to go at us that would have made us panic or made us fall back and, you know, defend ourselves at a doorway or, you know, do the sorts of things that make for memorable experiences. And the one thing I'll say for this game is the experiences aren't memorable because they're all onesies and you move from onesie to onesie to onesie. Okay, so these are the two guys we attack in the next room and we go after those. And once we get their numbers down, we move on to the next one.
And it wants you to make that comparison, right? I mean, it's inviting you to. It's dressed like...
Right. So
I mean,
so,
all of the flavor text, it's very dramatic.
Like, it wants you to... It's inviting you to make that comparison.
I'm surprised this doesn't take place in the Forgotten Realms.
I imagine they couldn't get the license.
Right. Whoever didn't want to pay the license or didn't want to go after it. But
you get the point.
But,
yeah,
you know,
it could, right?
The result is... You know, you want Mexican food and you end up at Chili's and you're like, okay, well, it's Mexican food, but it's this very, very highly processed designed to make all Americans enjoy it because they have potato skins and all the things you have at every other restaurant. So, and that's what I think a bunch of this game is I think it's just, it's fast food. It's very nicely packaged. The art is fine and everybody worries about how thick the cardboard is and that's all fine. And from that perspective, it's a very nice package and it's a lot of material for the price that you're paying for it. So that's good news. But from a gameplay perspective, it's very vanilla. It's just not, there's not surprise moments. There's not, oh my gosh, how did that happen? When you open a chest, you might take 2 points of damage, but that's about the only thing that's going to surprise you coming out of that chest, at least so far. We've only done 5 levels now. So let's see what happens as we progress. But as it stands right now, I think it's just, it's an above average game. It's providing an above average experience. And, you know, all of us have those few games that, you know, if you mention it a week ahead of time, everybody's like, oh, I got to find a way to make it this week. Because there's good games out there. There's really good stuff that really makes you jump. So I'm giving it a solid 7. I don't think it's a bad game. I don't think it's a game that's going to ever call out to me. And I'm fine with playing it for a few more levels and seeing how it goes from there. But then at that point, maybe it'll be time to move on.
I want to give it the benefit of the doubt because, you know, like you said, the first 5 scenarios are the intro scenarios. I feel like it has to go somewhere for it to be so highly rated.
Right. But at the same time, if it doesn't grab you in the first however many hours it takes you to play through the starting 5 scenarios,
that's when you're trying to sell people on.
Right.
Yeah. Those first 5 hours.
Yeah. I'm sitting here thinking,
I'm fine with a little bit of wind up.
Right, but I'm sitting here thinking, so is the heel tank boss that never attacked us the peak boss design? Like, it just sat there and we punched it until it exploded? Is that, like, because we only drew special abilities, which I assume means every other card in the boss deck is some variation of it punches you.
Right.
So,
or it punches you extra hard.
Right. Like, I hope it gets better from there, but if it does, why not put your selling points in the tutorial? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I will say, if after a few more, after we get to level 5, either naturally or artificially, if it changes our mind, we'll get right back on the microphones and we'll sing its praises.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
But as I say, I'll be honest with you, I think they could have done more with this kit, with all the stuff in this thing, in those scenarios and those cards about how the enemy reacts and what they do. I think they could have made a more exciting game.
What do you give it, John?
Like I said, it's a solid 7.
You gave it the solid 7.
I'm not calling out, but it's okay.
I do agree with you. You really could have, even just tweaking the enemy cards.
I think you could. Yep.
You could get a lot more, right? The only, I'd love to see some sort of telegraph of what the enemy is going to do the next round, because that doing that lets you plan around it, right? And now,
want the opposite.
You want the opposite?
I want.
They already do some random thing every round. Do you want it to be more consistent?
No, I'm not talking about random. I'm talking about holy crap!
Surprising.
I didn't know they could do that. Yeah,
right. To have that, you would need to rejigger the movement. To do it the way Sam's proposing, right, where you know what
I'm not saying you see what they're going to do the next round ahead of time. Just some sort of tell it so that you know, oh, the cultists are preparing some sort of big ranged attack, or oh, the chaos demon is,
you can see him winding
like
up their magic,
winding up some right. special transformation.
Sure, and I think this because, all goes back to, you know, the analogy, because I love it, because the more I think on it, I think it's perfect, that this is like the World War One of board games, right? That you're just going to...
It's just a slog.
You're just going to sit there, and you're going to punch each other until one of you is exhausted, or there's none of
Rocky
you left.
Three.
And I guess...
Right? Like, that's so, that's what it is. And so, like, if you're going to start introducing those big events, like, okay, they're building up for a big arrow attack. Okay, well, now, you know, you've got to totally configure how we're going to be able to move this turn.
Right. Well, that's exactly the point, right?
But
because so in this version of the game, right, the enemies do some random thing every round, right? You have no way of knowing what it is. You
they
can't
probably
really
are going to move,
forward.
And they're probably
exactly
going to
enemies going to do each round. That's the problem.
Yeah, they might not move at all.
Right. Well, they move minus one. Well, that's not a surprise.
But the point is, you really can't react to the enemy. And they can't react to you.
Right.
You just have to kill them first.
Well, there's nothing to react to.
Exactly.
That's sort of the
I'm
point.
There should be
I'm
something
saying.
To react
so
to.
Vanilla.
Sure, I'm totally agreeing. I'm saying, but I think to start making that system work, you'd have to be totally redesigning all the combat. Like you couldn't.
Oh,
you couldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's a boring combat engine.
Yeah, absolutely. The World War One.
Yeah.
Board games.
I bet you could do better with just some tweaks to this.
I think you could definitely improve it, even with like you said, just that, you know. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think from where I sit, you know, I think it's, you know, great packaging, beautiful design, all that type of stuff, great artwork. But, you know, as sort of like everybody else has said, it's just, for me, it doesn't all gel together, right? Like, it's selling you as sort of like D&D, but you don't have any agency and you are only going to do one thing every single time. You're going to play your character the same way every single scenario, and you're just making sure you don't run out of cards by the end. Like, you know, it doesn't sell me on the setting, doesn't sell me on the characters, but like everyone else has said, I can tell it was like thought out, designed, play tested, all that type of stuff. So it's hard to complain about
the overall package.
The overall package, but just as a...
Just doesn't have the right feeling.
Yeah. It's slippery enough, you can't really even get a good hold on what about it is that doesn't knock you out.
Yeah. Yeah exactly. Yeah, but nonetheless, it's maybe a slippery seven is how
slippery
I...
Slippery seven.
A slippery
like,
seven.
It's a seven, soft you can't just, seven. It just can't get a hold
it's
of
just, you have perfect information, you have all of the cards in your hand... And it still doesn't feel that great to put together the perfect plan.
No.
I mean, speak for yourself, because for me, that's what I have to do.
And I think that's actually an interesting thing to note, is that the three of us are saying, meh, and the guy with the most complicated, distinct characters going, well, I thought it like there were moments that were okay.
Yeah.
And I think that's because
that's one part of the piece.
You had the most distinct character.
I want that same sort of action coming back at me, though. I don't want to get it for free. So I agree her character or his character is more interesting. It happens to be a woman, but his character is more interesting from a how do I assemble my six pieces instead of my three pieces, but at the same time, the enemies are more or less standing there waiting for you to hit them, and I think that your opponents need to be more dynamic.
It's like a D&D campaign with none of the agency and storytelling and all of the boring combat.
Just used the word dynamic. It's not dynamic, and I think that is the crux of the matter. There's no dynamism at all in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. At least so far.
Yep. I agree.
I mean, I don't see how it could change to include it.
Yeah, well,
okay.
Just saying.
So do we want to do this again at fifth level?
I think if our opinion changes.
I'd be willing to jump to fifth level. I would be less excited if we wanted to...
Slog to it?
I don't know if slog's the right word, but...
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll peek ahead at the next two scenarios.
Okay.
See what they look like.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind doing... I wouldn't mind... just jumping on the track. Well, no, give the game a fair run. I mean,
well,
maybe
see how long it would take us to get to fifth level.
Yeah. So that's Gloomhaven, Jaws of the Lion. We're gonna give it a fair shake. We're gonna revisit it. So there's no dynamism yet. So that's where we're at.
All right, then. I like that.
We've got new cables. We've got a new recorder.
We've got new batteries.
And new batteries. So.
And hopefully we've got an SD card inserted.
This is a podcast. This is basically where we're at. No, the little red light's on. That means it's recording. Good. And that wouldn't come on if there weren't an SD card. So we're in good shape. So